1972, a crack commando unit was sent to prison by a military court for a crime they didn't commit. These men promptly escaped from a maximum security stockade to the Los Angeles underground. Today, still wanted by the government, they survive as soldiers of fortune. If you have a problem, if no one else can help, and if you can find them, maybe you can hire the A-Team.
That was great. Are we on?
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Welcome to Pep Talks. We just had a great video opening up Matt Rossomano made where the A-Team was used. And I'm very excited this week on Pep Talks because, one, Steve Lally is not here, my partner. And that's always good for me. Because I could just, like, really do the stuff I want to do. You know, I don't know if many of you know it, but I'm like an abused spouse in that relationship. Steve has tight control over me, tells me what to say, and I urinate a lot when I'm around Steve. So anyway, that's not true at all, and I'm sure you know that. But anyway, today with Steve, by the way, it's hilarious that my partner Steve, he goes to tour in Florida. He just landed in Florida, and there's a hurricane that's now, like, he times his tours, so there's a hurricane. Anyway, I am here with my friend, an author and playwright, and musician. You really are a triple set. His name is Richie Lucas, and he wrote a book called The Dog Log that we are going to be talking about today, The Dog Log. Richie, welcome.
Thank you, Eddie.
Get up on the mic a little bit. Yes, I have known you for how many years?
Oh, gosh. Maybe approaching 15, 12, 13, 14,
right?
15, yeah.
Yeah. Holy shit. Me and Richie met at an incredibly fun theater run by our friend Paul Kozlowski, who's been on this show via the phone. Paul ran the Fake Gallery, and we both, and I remember me and my wife saw you do, well, a bunch of things we liked. John Wilkes Booth. What the fuck were you doing with John Wilkes Booth?
You know, you mentioned the Fake, and
yeah.
I miss the Fake so much. I used to go to the Fake when I was doing stand-up, and I used to go to watch you guys and aspire to it because you were all so smart, and, you know, I guess it was in the alternative, quote-unquote, because it's not just set-up joke. It's thinking and reacting and
right.
Being very live. And you guys did the Fake show where you and Paul were up in TV
me
sets.
Me and Frank
or you
Conniff.
And Frank Conniff were up in TV sets. And
yeah, that was pretty wild where Paul suspended two black and white TV sets from the ceiling. And me and Frank would be up in the balcony and we had little cameras on us. And we would be broadcast to the audience through these two little TV sets. It was great. And Conniff is a super funny man, and it was great.
And Paul was always open to absolutely everything. And,
yeah.
Too
much. Paul was open to too much.
Well, that might be where I walked in the door, because he was doing a historic show, a theme show,
mm-hmm.
and said, oh, you know, why don't you do something? And I started thinking, so I came up with this John Wilkes Booth, on the eve of assassinating Abraham Lincoln,
yeah.
John Wilkes Booth receives a breakup letter from his girlfriend. So,
oh, that's what it was. John
yeah.
Wilkes Booth receiving a breakup. Now, I want to say this about your comedy, about you as an artist, I think. And I use the word artist not that much, but I think you are definitely an artist. Your stuff reminds me of mine in the sense that it's got big time undertones and maybe overtones of pathos and serious stuff and a dark side. And I think that's why we're so simpatico, you know, like I tell the audience now at the Comedy Store, I say, folks, I don't know what the fuck you're laughing at tonight. It's not that funny out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To me, the funny comes from absolute pain. Mm. And that's a good segue into your book, The Dog Log. Go ahead. I read it. I loved it. My wife read it. She loved it. I found it. So you tell the story. You set up the story of The Dog Log and when it's coming out and all that.
All right. Well, part of that, by the way, the John Wilkes Booth thing is on Funny or Die. People can still find it. It's like a 10-year-old video or something like that. It comes back a little bit to the fake, because when I was living next to a barking dog.
I remember that. Yes. Yeah. You started this book as storytelling stuff.
Yeah, because I was living next to this barking Yorkie and a neighbor, an older person, an older
woman.
And
the Yorkie would not stop barking.
Would not stop barking.
Which is, that is the definition of insanity at some point, like to hear that over and over and over and over again.
Yeah, and even in referring to it as over and over and over, there's a pattern in the phrase over and over and over. And in barking, there's no pattern. It's the ultimate strange randomness that your head can't get itself around. There's no mathematics there. There's no logic to it. But it's a living being. So,
that's what kills me
about it. You want to figure out, why is it barking? What's it barking? What is it trying to say? But it's just this little, you know, peanut brain animal just reacting in the moment, in every moment. So each new bark, I think, is a new reaction to that new moment of, I don't know what the animal was thinking, but I was living next to a barking dog, and I saw where, you know, every local municipality makes you keep a log, because they're not just going to come in with,
you called up the West Hollywood Sheriff's Department, and they told you, look, you have to keep a fucking log.
Yeah, everybody.
Which is, to me, unbelievable.
Everybody everywhere has to keep a log, because you can't just call. And the sheriff's department or whatever local authority is not going to come down and bust down the neighbor's door in Alien Gonzalez style and take the dog away and solve all your problems. They have more important things to deal with, and they hope it will just work itself out.
Right.
They want to give, maybe the dog has an allergy, right? Maybe the dog has an emotional issue it's dealing with at the time or something like that. So they have to give it time.
Right.
And I sort of understand that. But in my situation, I had just lived with it for so long that I wanted an answer, and I wasn't going to get an answer. So it's basically to protect yourself, keep a log so you have evidence, and then the reality is if it's going to come to a lawsuit or something like that, or an eviction, you know, then you need many months. Two months is not enough to walk into
court. 2 months, by the way.
It's not enough.
Well, just I can't imagine, because at the time of this, you worked from home. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah.
So you weren't even out of the fucking apartment, right? You worked from home, and you talked about it in the book, how, you know, your productivity was fucked up from that.
Yeah, scattered at best. And the walls, you know, the walls are so thin that I say that They don't separate our apartments. They actually blend them in a way, seeming to bring the sound into my space. So at the time, 2008, I guess, 2009, I was incorporating, going from stand-up into storytelling shows. And at storytelling shows, I was just talking about this experience of living with this torment. And out of the neighbor, we were bitter enemies. And whenever I tried to bring it up, she would just yell back at me because, you know, she was... I didn't know it at the time, but it's all she had in her world were those two Yorkies over there. One couldn't bark. So I was expressing this, like you said, a place from pain, of seriousness and pain was what I was talking about.
And frustration.
Stage. Yeah. So I started writing this, Dear Sheriff, 9 a.m., Sophie is barking.
The Dog Log.
The Dog Log.
Which is the title of the book.
Dear Sheriff, 9:15, Sophie is still barking.
Right.
You know, then you get to 9:30, you get to 10 a.m., and it's like, how much of this do I have to write? The dog is barking. So I was reading from this barking dog log, and that's when I did a solo show at The Fake, back to Paul that venue, The Fake, where Paul said to me, you've got a show here. reading from this barking dog log because it was Paul.
I didn't know that.
It was Paul who made me feel encouraged enough. And again, I have such respect for all you guys who worked there all the time that to have been brought into that and Paul saying, hey, there's a show here, really made me go, well, I'm going to do a show. So, you know, with anger, frustration, something like a barking dog, anything that drives you crazy.
Yeah.
At some point, if you're writing about it, you're going to say, why does this make me so angry? Why does my life feel so out of control? What else is wrong in my life? And the nature of a log or a journal is that that stuff's going to start coming out because you're writing.
So the dog whose name was...
The original dog was Sophie.
Sophie, right.
Sophie.
Which is perfect because of Sophie's Choice. You know, like that was a heavy movie. And it launched Meryl Streep, who's done very well since then. And anyway, I just want to say that. So the dog, just what you described, the dog Sophie was this portal into a self-examination of your life. And that's really... Is that fair to say what the book is about? Like when you told me, here, read the book, right? I was like, okay, oh, Richie wrote a book. It went deep, man. It went really deep. And it was a great story about, just someone like examining their past, examining their present. You talked a lot about your dad, your mom growing up in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. Central to it is an ex-girlfriend of yours, and just how heartbroken you were by it. It's all going on, and it's just this tapestry, and it's happening here in Los Angeles, in West Hollywood, which is sort of like, you know, that L.A. For an artist is like there's no bigger kind of pressure cooker. There's no bigger, like you're face to face with success and failure in town, I think, more than any other city. Like I'm from New York. I lived in New York. But New York, you could kind of just blend into whatever is going. There's a lot going on here in Los Angeles, particularly if you're an artist. It's all about making it, you know?
Yeah. And the longer that you're here, you see friends start to go up the ladder and start to make it.
Tell me about it.
You get that. You sense that separation. That this book, it's kind of a micro big city story because it really is my tiny little life and my neighbor's life. And I call it an epic journey of 40 feet because that's sort of the entire movement of the book. But in the anger,
amazing,
the frustration that unfolds, and looking at my own life, I frankly judge everything I've done up to the point in the book, which would have been years ago, so not including, you know, Godominos and that stuff. But this
Godominos, this we was, should let people know. Richie wrote, it's a one-act, a one-act play called Waiting for Godomino.
Yeah, Bono and the Edge, Waiting for Godominos. It's a Godot parody where instead of two destitute guys waiting for perhaps a god, we've got a god on earth who is Bono, who orders a pizza delivery to get back in touch with the common man. So they're waiting for this pizza delivery guy to come into the castle and get them back in touch.
I love that play. And you put it up at the LA Fringe,
the
right?
Hollywood Fringe Festival in 2017. And
it started taking you all over.
We've been in San Francisco and San Diego and Ventura and Las Vegas, and looks like we might be going back to San Francisco soon. And
it's still happening.
Yeah, and we really want to travel with it because it's the one artistic thing I've ever done in my life that has been thus far, thank goodness, knock on wood, unblemished. People really, truly get a kick out of it. And the statement that it tries to make, it seems to make clearly and deliver. But the book goes back to before the play, when as I was writing and adding things up, I was considering everything in my life to that point. You know, career, relationships,
family,
anything
past
artistic.
History.
Yeah, just all a failure. And that's why it funneled into You know, me being able to complain about this barking dog was really I'm the barking dog complaining about my own miserable failed existence. And at the time, I was honestly looking at my life and just checking each box off, going failure, 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 failure. And
think the dog kind of intensified it, like with that, you know, that incredible barking, and the dog was alone a lot.
Oh, totally. When I did the first solo show, the stuff at the fake, it was only about the barking. And yeah, I always love to do a Q&A after every show, because the audience members are so smart and so funny. And I even do it, do it after Godomino's now. I do a Q&A because I just love the questions and I love the wise-ass remarks from audience. But you know, someone raised their hand way back when in 2009 and said something like, you know, do you think that this barking dog, you focus on it because it gives you something to focus on and it gives you a reason to exist?
Oh, shit.
And I love that. Well, I don't know, 6 months or a year after those shows, which was 6 weeks or something, and the Comedy Central stage, I did it there. But almost a year later, whatever the timeline was, my neighbor actually, she fell. And she fell right in front of my door. And I don't know, at the time, broke her arm, broke her shoulder. I don't know. Yeah. I called 911. Ambulance came, took her away. But the barking continues. She's at the hospital. And then it, you know, morning turns to afternoon, turns to evening, turns to night. Then it's midnight. Dogs are still over there. No one has come by. So I had an emergency key at that time. And I went in to take a look, maybe throw some food at them. And what I found in my neighbor's apartment was, you know, a manifestation of her depression and the reasons why she was an angry person. The apartment was a terrible mess. She was a hoarder, and the dogs were completely undrained, up close, totally filthy, the floors, you know, almost beyond description. I try to describe it in the book, where I went in there that first night. And of course, I was still an angry person and still angry about the neighbor. I just threw some food in the bowls and ran out for fresh air. Nothing the next morning. So the next day I go over in the daylight, I see what it all is, throw some food in the bowls. And
meanwhile, your neighbor is in the hospital and she's not coming back. It's like, where the hell?
There's no word. Yeah, I'm thinking,
the dogs are alone. Your neighbor's not coming back. Her apartment is just a disaster.
Yeah, area. From years of this.
Her story, by the way, in the book is an incredible story. And it really, oh, man, it just gets me to thinking, you know, just about like the devolution, I guess you could call it, of life, or, you know, the evolution, like what happens to a person's life and how they can wind up, you know, and how, you know, she was someone who was like a really successful lawyer.
Vassar, UCLA, had her own law practice in Beverly Hills, beautiful home on Coldwater Canyon. Now, and I, in the book,
right.
I try to recall the first time that we met, she knocked on my door and said, oh, I'm your neighbor, Irene, and I'm going to be the best neighbor you ever had. And I said, oh, why is that? I didn't want to be disturbed. So you're already a notch down from best neighbor ever, because I don't want a neighbor knocking on my door. I live in Los Angeles. I don't want neighbors knocking on my door. That's how that's how we live out here. So she said, oh, because I'm blind in one eye and deaf in one ear, so I can't see and I can't hear, so you know you'll have all your privacy. Then she went on just with the story of her life, essentially, the highlights. And really, at that time, I'm on the other side of the screen thinking to myself, this is madness. This all can't be true. I'm looking at her.
Unbelievable.
Going, she was a wreck. And I remember thinking at the time, you know, she told me in that conversation that she'd had a brain tumor removed, and that's what affected her sight, affected her hearing, affected a lot of nerves. I certainly believe led to a lot of depression. She lost her house. She lost everything. And
it also seemed like she didn't have a lot of support around.
No, no support, no family. Her mother sort of abandoned her, and. That's a complicated story. That isn't mine, you know, that's hers. But
yeah.
I remember thinking back and thinking, you know, if there's a brain tumor in my head right now that I don't know about that hits me, I have no great successes that I could claim to have lost because of the brain tumor.
That's such
you know, that at least she has that. And it really made me go sort of go back into my apartment and hang my head and go, and here I am judging her, thinking she's a little off the mark. And she's, and I'm like, who the fuck am I?
You were at, like the more I think about it, you were at such, like this whole thing, and this is what the book on one hand is about. This whole thing is like you at a crossroads in your life. You had been in LA for a while, right? You had come here from fucking Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, and you get into your, you get into your past and your childhood, your dad, right? You want to talk about your dad a little, like what happened, you know, it was intense, man.
Well,
and by the way, I want to just say this, that this book, it's just such, to me, like it was, it's so about the fragility of our existence, you know, the fragility. I mean, it's about a few things, like the fragility of our existence, you know, how things can happen like that. And, you know, things change, you know, boom. It's also about incredible perseverance and finding a way, finding a path. I mean, it's incredible kind of what's come out of this. You know, you're publishing this book. It's going to be released. What's the exact date it's being released?
September 3rd, Tuesday, day after Labor Day. 3rd. In stores. It's out online now and delivers and is in store September 3rd everywhere, Barnes & Noble. And I'm not sure if it's in store at Target. It's online at Target and Amazon and Books A Million. It's available everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I came out here. And, you know, you talked about the fragility and one of the survival instincts and after years in Los Angeles is to deal with the lows is you try to not buy into them too much, but then to be fair to yourself, you have to not buy into the good things either because they're so temporal. They're gone so quickly too.
And by the way, that's almost the exact opposite of an artist temperament. An artist temperament is like, you know, we go way up and way fucking down.
Yeah, and that versus the survival instinct of not being too happy when you're happy because it's dangerous and then trying not to be too low when you're low.
So hard to do.
So I moved out here as a musician, a singer-songwriter, and, you know, bunch of demo tapes, bunch of managers, ended up doing an album. It was picked up at Tower Records.
Remember Tower Records when I first came out here, and then it disappeared shortly after I got here.
It was, a great chain, and it was eventually global, and there's a great documentary about it. It's called All Things Must Pass or All Things Pass. And happily, I'm doing a book reading at Book Soup in West Hollywood on Sunset Boulevard. Everyone's invited. It'll be a fun night. But it's directly across September 10th at 7 p.m. It's in West Hollywood.
Book Soup.
And that's directly across from Tower Records, which used to be, but it's still an iconic. They haven't changed the building. That's where I did my last ever live performance as the solo artist that I was in support of my album. They did an in-store concert there at 2 in the afternoon one day, and they took graphics from my album and made big posters, and all the CD racks were on wheels, and they moved them out of the way and created a little stage. And I had acoustic music. I had played acoustic guitar, and I had the songwriter partner of mine, Scott Harris, played saxophone, and the album producer, Doug Lacey, played accordion. We had a percussionist. But I'm looking out at the people in the room, you know, friends who took the day off, and, you know, to see me that day. But I'm looking for, where's the guy from Geffen? Where's the guy from A&M? Because I'd had these sort of pre-conversations and these half promises and these touches of interest. And that day, my heart wasn't in the songs. I felt bad for my friends that had taken this time for this thing, because in my mind, I guess I wasn't even playing the music. I was just trying to get a record deal. And I was being disappointed as I was playing.
Right.
And I didn't know what it
was. I went through a phase like that as a comedian where I was all about industry, like who's in the crowd, who's in the crowd. And now when I know they're in the crowd, I just insult them. Like I hate them so much.
Yeah.
Mainly, you know, I mean, there's a lot of, they're kind of cool surface wise and they're okay. But they, it's like, you know, being someone who's, you know, you do it because you love it.
Yeah.
And that's the fucking bottom line. That, you know?
It should be. But I was younger and I was less mature. And I didn't know it at the time, but I didn't schedule gigs. And it, well, a year and a half later, I realized, wow, that was my last gig in my life, wasn't it? And Book Soup is right across the street from that Tower Records. And in the book, I think it's around page 68 or so, there are a couple pages that talk about that last show and tell that story.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to be at Book Soup and talk about that, doing another in-store.
That's awesome.
Know?
Now we have a couple of calls. These are going to seem a little out of place because, you know, we look. We're going to do this, okay? I have a call in. We have calls, folks, and if you want to call in and leave a message for the show, it's 424-262-0904. If you want to call in, it's 424-262-0904. And our first call today is from Paul, I think. Well, here we go.
Paul's for-profit prison. If we fill up, we'll just expand. There's no offense too minor. Please ask about our white leniency. There's franchise options available. If they keep sending them, we'll keep keeping them. Paul's for-profit prison.
Thank you, Paul. If it was Paul, but that's a great ad for a prison. First of all, America, and this is something me and you have in common too, is we, and you did this very well in Waiting for Godomino's, you know, kind of going after the corporate power structure. And one thing that is going on now in our prison, it's called the prison, it's the military prison industrial complex we live in. And the for-profit prisons are unfucking believable.
We had a judge. This was a famous national case recently. We had a judge in Wilkes-Barre, I can't remember his name, who went down, who was taking, I believe he was taking money to convict teenagers, kids, to send them to one of these for-profit prisons to keep the prison full because the prison made money that way. And
he
kind of ran this court where he wasn't even letting people testify. He was just, the kids were coming in and he was convicting them.
Because he wanted to fill that. Was he get, like, why did he have an interest in that?
I imagine he was getting kickbacks. Yeah, but they did catch him. And
oh, they did?
Yeah, and he's in jail.
The judge is in jail?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would say that's a big turn of events. Talk about life. I mean, you know, you talk about it in your book, you know, just the fucking, I mean, that's what hit me. In the book is just how, you know, it's just how anything can happen, you know, and also about how, this is another thing I wanted to mention about you in the book is that you're very philosophical and you're very like, you know, you get into this whole little riff, and I love that you go between science, like Allie. Mm-hmm. Is like, look, everything happens for a reason. And kind of the new age speak.
Which I love to hear.
Right? You do?
No, I don't.
You hate it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just so funny. Like you start talking about, explain a little bit about, I believe it was, you know, you were referencing Einstein about how we react to the field, or does the field act on us? The environment, like, does the environment act on us? We act on the environment. Do we create it, or does the environment create us, or is it both?
Yes. When I was, I believe, when I was, you know, when I discovered how terrible my neighbor's place was, and I started to understand that the things she told me about her life were real, and I felt I was looking at the, you know, standing inside the brain of depression.
Wow. I see. Yeah.
To survive it, I cleaned a little part of the floor because I was wearing Ralph's bags on my shoes and latex gloves and a painter's mask because it was that intense. And I cleaned a little spot near the kitchen sink so I could stand there for a minute when I was washing the dog's bowls. And then I eventually, you know, day after day or walk, I would start to clean a path for myself, all the time thinking my neighbor's going to come home any moment. It's just a broken arm. You know, I'm getting no information. So I wasn't doing any of this with a plan. That's what I was doing, it just inches at a time, a little bit at a time.
And also, you're dealing with the dogs now.
Two
dogs. By the way, this book hit me so hard, too, because I have two little dogs. And these are too little.
The vulnerability of them, and they're looking up at you. And the first time I touched them, because I hated them, remember? I hated them. Was when I had the latex gloves on. And I didn't even count that as maybe they're reacting to me. I thought, oh, they must like the rubbery feel of latex or something. I was that distance from being a dog person or understanding dogs.
You really were not a dog person.
I was not a dog person. I was not a dog person.
Boy, they found their way into your life. You've brought Lauren here.
Lauren is sitting here with us this afternoon, being a good girl.
Aww.
So I think that, you know how there's a theory on back pain that sometimes it's your body's way of giving you a distraction from whatever is bothering you emotionally. There's a big theory on that you can help your back pain psychologically by trying to heal what you're holding in or swallowing down. So it gives you this distraction to think about something else. And I think that these dogs and the cleaning was setting mini goals and getting me something to do, something to think about, get out of my apartment once in a while. Not with
because
any kind
you were
of plan.
Going through a huge breakup, right?
Yeah, I was in a real bad place altogether. And you know, when it comes to the breakup, I think that's where I started to think about the household I grew up in. I was the youngest in my family, so
how many kids?
Five total, and I had a very different experience, especially with my dad than. We've all talked about it. My brothers and sister and I have talked about this, and they understand. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just saw Dad in his real committed drinking years. You know, not the developing ones, but the ones where he was there.
Yeah.
And I thought about the household, and I thought about why have the relationships I've been in, who've been with great, great, fantastic people, and I've blown it every time, basically. And they seem to sniff a sense of lack of commitment. And so in this book, I finally tried to figure out if there's a seed to that and what the reason is, and then if I can work my way through figuring it out. So I tried in the book to figure it out. And, you know, my dad wasn't all bad, certainly. And so I try to balance that in the book. Yeah, and all the while cleaning, and then, you know, it goes from cleaning to trying to train the dogs, because every time you come in, they've peed and pooped inside again. You have to clean it up again as you're also trying to clean up a path for yourself to walk in. And after a couple of weeks, I realized, you know, I need to try to give these guys a bath, because I can't take this anymore. But if I clean the dogs, I can't set them down on a filthy floor. So then I realized I have to clean the entire floor if I'm going to clean the dogs. And then it became a really big project. And you were talking about, you know, the how much of the environment. And that's what I was trying to figure out, you know, because my neighbor had clearly let things go and created this environment.
Yeah.
And then the environment, I think, also created her, you know, her spinning wheel of staying that way.
Right.
And then, But I don't think I answer that question. I'm not sure if I answer any of the philosophical things in there. And I like to argue against anything that I hear that's philosophical. I like to try to take the other side. And that was the advantage of having the sheriff that I'm always writing to. This anonymous person that I don't know if it'll ever get read or ever cared, you know. Because a barking dog log, you got to assume they're going to look at the first date and go, oh, okay, October 1st started off. They're just going to turn to the last date. Even if it's a big, thick thing from a crazy person, they're going to look at the last date and go, oh, you know, whatever the date, December 31st, you know, citizen turned in 4 months of barking dog log. They're not going to read the damn thing. But, you know, when I get into these conversations with people and I'm writing to the sheriff, this happened to me today, my neighbor said this or my sister said this, then, you know, at the end of the conversation, I'll turn to the sheriff and say, do you believe that bullshit, sheriff? Does anybody ever say stuff like that to you?
You know what would be hilarious if you're, if the sheriff, if you actually delivered the entire log to the sheriff and he's just weeping in West Hollywood going, and he's reading it out loud to the other deputies, you know, going, God damn it, listen to this.
Well, I think I ask him in there, like, whose job is it to read citizen-generated journals?
Yeah, yeah, it was funny.
Is there a comfortable chair with good reading light?
Yeah. He was basically God. In, you know what I mean? Like, you're talking, which, you know, to me, after I read the book, I was like, shit, maybe I should start a log to a fictional or a imaginary person, and I could and it would be such a great way to get out my stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Because what is God but a, you know, creation of ours? Well, right?
Yeah. And we there is an analogy here for prayer. No doubt
Absolutely,
about it.
Yeah.
You're reaching out to an authority. You don't know if the authority is ever going to read the book or if God is listening.
Right.
We as humans tend to personify, you know, that deity. Just like in the book, I think I go right to the cliche of a sheriff's deputy. I assume it's a man. I try to qualify it all in there. You're probably this. You're probably that. I don't know it. But really, a picture develops in your mind. Just like anything else you're reaching out to.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, you would find that in your mind, you'd start to picture something, someone pretty specific.
Interesting.
You know?
Like probably very like fatherly, but kind of benign. You don't forgot. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know, whatever.
And they talk back. I mean, when I say bad stuff in here, when I'm really angry and talk about doing terrible things to the dogs, then I stop myself and say, well, look, Sheriff, I know I sound like I'm an asshole, but I'm not an asshole. I swear to God, I can hear the person speaking back to go, what are you talking about? You know?
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
I just have voices in my head.
we are going to read now an email. And if you want to leave an email for the podcast, it's epepitone@sbcglobal.net. And you could donate here, Pepitone podcast, or he's saying Pepitone podcast on this. I hope it's, I don't know, PepitonePodcast.com. But here is an email. And this is from Sean Thompson Sr. It looks like you've misspelled the word plus. PLUSE on your website. I thought you would like to know, smiley face. Silly mistakes can ruin your site's credibility. I've used a tool called sillyspell.biz in the past to keep my mistakes off my website. Well, thanks, Sean. You know, if there's one thing we pride ourselves on here at Pep Talks Podcast, it's advertising for products that don't pay us. And while I'd love to do a free promotion for sillyspell.biz and their ability to safely and thoroughly proofread our website for the low cost of $495 a month, I'd like to point out that peptalkspodcast.com is a charity organization funded by donations from listeners like you. Our website is maintained by a small family of Micronesian refugees who came to this country by cleverly smuggling themselves in a crate of IKEA furniture. Imagine my surprise when I ordered a desk, and not only did it arrive pre-assembled, but there was a family of four living in it. It's those same clever Micronesian refugees who build and maintain all my websites. So anytime you see a misspelled word, badly formed grammar, or a post that reads like a cry for help or a general plea for the police, just remember peptalkspodcast.com is listener-funded and maintained by a family who doesn't speak English and is paid in sugar cubes. All right, yeah. okay. So, all right. So, the book, you want to talk about, what part of the book do you want to talk about now, or just the overview of it, or...
Well, I think one of the interesting parts of the timing of it coming out this week, right now, is that it's there's a strong love thy neighbor theme.
Absolutely.
That in Los Angeles, we don't talk to our neighbors. We don't want to know who they are. We keep blinders on, and we want our privacy. And really, in today's political climate, you know, it's become very tribal, and people take sides, and they don't want to open up and hear, you know, differing opinions, and that's invaded families. It's invaded, you know, groups of friends, this book is a total escape from that. And, you know, one could ask oneself, when was the last time you had the thought, love thy neighbor? You know, because we're getting very suspicious of one another. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're in dark times, and we're making them a little darker the way we're handling things. And this book is a total apolitical.
Yeah. It is apolitical, yeah.
About it's in the end, it's a human story more than a dog story. My agent, I love her phrase is she says, "Come for the humor, stay for the humanity," and I love that. I love that thought about the book.
Come for the humor, stay for the humanity.
Because there's that just a tiny little. It's a tiny little story. You know, and it's a memoir. It's a comedic memoir from a guy who's totally anonymous that nobody knows. But I hope people feel a little of that love thy neighbor thing toward the end, because
that is so prescient right now. I mean,
I think it's okay to give away a little of the ending, because I think you have to assume a dog book like this has a somewhat of a happy ending, and the happy ending is that this neighbor and I. Ended up great friends when she came home from the convalescent home that first time. I was still concerned about the dogs. I wanted to keep their training up.
Right. Yeah. That's an amazing section of the book. Is you, you know, they were just like, it was Lord of the Flies in that apartment.
Yeah.
And you trained them.
Going every which way. Yeah. Getting them to understand that being outside meant.
Outside.
Yeah. Meant outside.
Yeah.
And, so when she came home, a friendship was kind of forced because I was coming over every night to walk the dogs at night because she couldn't.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then that turned into us chatting, and then that turned into us talking about life and helping each other out with some things.
Yeah.
And I never stopped going over and walking the dogs.
And you have the dog, you're so close to the dogs. You brought one of the dogs here. Are they yours? Are they hers?
Well,
are they both at this point?
She's currently in a convalescent home now, because she struggles and she falls, and I automatically take care of the, you know, Nelson's not with us anymore, but Lauren is, and so I have her in my care now, pretty much, really, really full time. Because even when my neighbor comes home, she's usually not strong enough to walk the dog or anything like that. So
yeah.
I just drop her off for visits or things like that. But So Lauren is now, we think, 15.
Wow.
Yeah, she's only got a few teeth. She is the cover girl. She is.
Oh,
the,
that's Lauren, is, not
it
Sophie.
Is, it is no, no. Well, I couldn't get a photo of Sophie. You know, Lauren's the one that we have. So, that's Lauren on the cover, and she's a sweet, sweet, sweet little girl who doesn't like to be alone. I mean, she was with her owner, who was home 24 hours a day, and then she went with me, and I still work at home. So,
yeah.
She's not really good at being left alone.
Yeah.
And I don't want to get a barking dog complaint. I can tell you that.
But you know, if Lauren, you know, barks a lot, that person is going to have to at least keep a lock.
Yeah.
It would be funny if, let's say, it's some other gentleman who you know, you know, Lauren starts barking at the apartment, at another apartment near you, and he writes a book, and your books are vying for the bestseller list. We have an ad to read, Richie, before we end the podcast. We all know that the world is ending sooner than later. Blame our Benny Hill caricature of a president, climate breakdown, ancient viruses released by the melting glaciers, or Jesus's eventual return, finding a civilization 2,000 years beyond his primitive understanding and going batshit insane. Final Countdown Brewing Company, who is the sponsor of this ad, makes craft beer designed with the end of civilization in mind, because whoever is left could probably use a drink. Final Countdown brews their beers from only materials that will survive whichever apocalypse we settle on, ensuring the brewing process can remain even if there are only roaches left to drink. Made mostly from fermented algae and Twinkies, Final Countdown may not be the tastiest beer, but after watching demons pour out from your dead mother's reanimated vagina while the sky bleeds, you'll drink what you got. Final Countdown Brewing, it's come to this. Well, thank you, Final Countdown. They're a new sponsor, and you know, they're just very realistic, you know. Okay, so let's do some final plug.
Okay.
For the book, you know, where everything, where we can get it, blah, blah, blah.
The entire title of the book is The Dog Log, An Accidental Memoir of Yapping Yorkies, Quarreling Neighbors, and the Unlikely Friendships That Saved My Life. It's published by Chicago Review Press, and I have to give a big thank you out to them, because I'll tell you, it's not a real open world for first-time authors, unknown people, people who, you know, don't have giant platforms and all
that
stuff.
No, it's a celebrity fucker world.
Yeah, so when a...
Starfucker is the phrase.
Yeah, that is the phrase. When an agent and a publisher give as much as they do to you, which is a chance for people to read your work, it's a big thing, and I'm genuinely really grateful to them. It is... You know, you can just Google search The Dog Log or The Dog Log Richard Lucas. It's available absolutely everywhere online. I believe it's in most bookstores, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. There's a great website, indiebound.org. If you want to support your local independent bookseller, which is a very, very cool thing to do, help the brick and mortar stay up. Mm-hmm. You can go to indiebound.org and look for The Dog Log, and then there's a zip code search. You type in a zip code, and it shows all the independent booksellers around you where you can pick up the book. And if they don't have the, I mean, I guess if they come with a list, they would have the book. But you can always go in and say, hey, I'd like to get a copy, Chicago Review Press, and get the book that way.
Awesome.
And I appreciate everybody listening about it, and I sure hope that they enjoy.
Yeah. Well, I loved it, and like I said, it, you know, it's such a book about compassion, and like you said, you know, about love thy neighbor, and like the backdrop being LA too is like so, what's the word I'm looking for? It's so disjointed. It's so, it's just such a juxtaposition. Like you don't think of this as an LA.
Yeah.
Story.
Yeah.
You know, but Richie, thank you.
I should mention, I forgot to mention the Book Soup in West Hollywood. I'll be at Book Soup with Lauren, doing a reading and signing there. And that's September 10th at 7 p.m. at Book Soup in West Hollywood. We're doing.
What night is that?
It's a Tuesday night.
Tuesday, okay.
We're doing a Barnes & Noble in Encinitas on Saturday, September 7th. At 1 to 3, so that's the San Diego area. So anybody, you know, dog lovers, people lovers, book lovers, come on out to that. That's a Saturday afternoon, right in the middle of the shopping day, 1 to 3 in Encinitas. We're going to be doing something, I think, at Tail Waggers on Fairfax, a little pet rescue thing.
Yeah.
I think later in September. So I'm on Twitter at Richard_Lucas. I'm on Instagram at rlucaspicts, P-I-C-T-S. I might end up changing that, but you can just search for Richard Lucas. And my website is richardlucascomedy.com, and there is a contact form if you want to join the email list there and
awesome.
See where this thing goes.
Thank you, Richie. I love the book so much, and big success is coming your way, I think. All right, everybody, that's our podcast for today. If you've enjoyed this radio broadcast from the bowels of the earth, please support your local station by buying products advertised on this network, donating via our website, peptalkspodcast.com, clicking the like button on your devices, subscribing, and as always, we encourage you to write a review. Reviews can be a fun way to express your most carnal and deviant thoughts to an audience who only cares about the number of reviews and not the content within. Honestly, write whatever your terrible mind can imagine and give it 5 stars. As always, we will read them here at the end of the show. We have no filters. Our engineer today is Emma Erdbrink. Also, our engineer here is Aaron Brungart. Our producer, Matt Rossamoto, who wrote the Final Countdown Brewing, our new sponsor. Leave a message, 424-262-0904. And that's it. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. Bye.